Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we have another show for you today, and it'll be a good one. It'll be a good one, and we're going to be having a conversation, or Jonna and Carol will, with an author named Matt Higgins.
Matt Higgins, yes, he's an author. That is his most recent accomplishment, but he's been an executive with the New York Jets. He's a co-owner of the Miami Dolphins. He was the youngest mayoral press secretary in New York City at just age 26 during 9/11. He's been on Shark Tank. This guy is a brilliant entrepreneur, amazing human. And he is going to be talking to us about his book called Burn the Boats. And it's all about, the subhead, you'll like this, Frankenberry, let toss plan B overboard and unleash your full potential. So he's all about when you make your mind up to go for something or make a change or take a leap, go all in, have no plan B, because that plan B hedges your expectations, you're counting on yourself, your ability to figure it out. And he's brilliant. I'm loving the book. I'm on my second time through. So when we come back from the break, after our first segment, we'll be talking with Matt Higgins.
All right. That sounds good. So how is everybody doing in the midst of a heat wave?
Managing. it looks like Jonna has accumulated a small petting zoo at her house.
Yes, apparently so. Apparently so, though. I am in love with one of those little kittens there, Miss Spilbore.
You're only in love with one of the little kitten?
Well, no, you sent me one particular picture. So that is the one. You sent me one face shot of one of them. Yes, of course, I would love all of them. But, you know, I'm just thinking of that one particular one.
Well, we can't use the word small when describing my petting zoo. Actually, we can't use the word small nor petting when we describe my petting zoo. Because it's just a zoo. I have a ton of animals, from the raccoon to the possum to the nightly skunk that comes by to the baby raccoons to now the baby kittens. Excuse me. And it's just a menagerie. And
menagerie.
This week, I have decided, is going to be the week that I capture, at the very least, all three kittens and hopefully their mother, too. Why is this week going to be the week, you ask? I will tell you.
Okay.
I have officially started, as of yesterday, at the time we are recording this show, yesterday would be Monday, I have started the first day of my staycation. Now, let me tell you why staycations are stay stupid. I am not loving. I've never done a staycation before. I haven't taken an actual vacation since January 2010. That's the last stamp in my
gosh.
I know. And don't feel sorry for me. I'm whining about it, but it's all me. It's my, like, if I wanted to take a vacation, I'd probably take a vacation. But I decided that I was going to compromise. This week seemed to be a good week, mid-July, and take a staycation. So I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to travel. But I needed a break from the everyday routine of the office, which I think we've talked about this. Everybody needs that. You need to refresh, recharge, and do the things.
Right.
Well, a staycation is not the way to do it. Because so far what I've done on the first day of my staycation is I've just stayed home and done chores. It's a chorecation is what I'm on, because I'm not here during the day to notice all the things that need fixing. Like, oh, this picture's crooked. Let me do that. Oh, you know what? Let me clean out these three closets and reorganizing them so that the toilet paper fits nicely on top of each other and is ready to grab at a moment's notice. Like, oh, pots and pans, I don't use them, but dang, they're messy. Let's fix that up. This is not fun or relaxing or recharging at all, except that I said to myself, since I'm going to be home, my self-imposed solitude, I will use this time to sneak up on these kittens who have decided to part-time live on my deck and under my deck, and I will nab them, since normally I am not here during the day to do that. But wouldn't you believe, since I put that plan in place, have I seen the kittens? No.
Of course not. Because, you know, they can read your mind, right?
They must know. They know. They sense something is up.
Your capture plan is to nab them, grab them? That's your plan?
To trap them gently.
Do you have traps set out?
Well, I have traps. They're not set up.
Okay, Jonna, I just want to let you know, by the way, that a stick, a box, and a string is not a real cat trap. That's only in the cartoons.
Oh, well, there goes that plan. You know what I did instead? That's the other thing I did on my staycation, basically. Well, if we count the weekend as the real start of the staycation, I installed cat cameras all over the place, under the deck, on top of the deck, all over. And now I get to watch them when I can't actually physically see them via the camera. They do spend a lot of time underneath my deck. It's kind of cute.
Let me ask you something. When you say install, do you mean you took out either a screwdriver or a power screwdriver and installed them yourself?
Funny you should ask, because again, on this staycation, I happen to have an electric screwdriver. It is pink.
Of course it is.
I have misplaced all of the actual little screwdriver tips, except for one small Phillips screwdriver tip, which to me fits everything. And I did. I went under my deck and I screwed in a camera with my pink electric screwdriver. And I did it. I did the thing. And it's not on there totally tight, but it's good enough.
Ugh.
So yeah, that's what's going on. Now, in my staycation chore mode, my chorecation mode, not only have I cleaned things out, installed cameras, recharged my pink screwdriver, I also found a watermelon that I forgot I had way in the back of a little tiny spare refrigerator, which brings me to point B that I wanted to explain to you.
Frankberry, at some point, this is all going to connect.
I know. Somehow it's going to get all tied up. But I'm just curious as to how old the
watermelon?
As old as the banana peel you found in your purse last year.
Oh God, remember that? Yeah, it probably is that old, but the watermelon's not cut up. So it could still be good. It's probably like a month or so old-ish, 6 weeks maybe. But
okay, so there's not like a new ecosystem growing inside of it, is what you're saying. It's not that old.
No, to be honest with you guys, after this show, since I'm on my chorecation, I think I'm going to actually chop it up and see if it's, you know, still good. Because it's in the refrigerator, so it's not doing much harm. Unlike something that occurred last week, which is kind of similar to this watermelon, but a little bit different. And that is, remember, I think we've talked about this a couple times. Remember, I told you guys the story way, way back when I had forgotten a bag of potatoes in an apartment. And when I finally found them and I lifted them up off the floor, a zillion fruit flies came flying off them and turned the ceiling of my apartment black. It went from white to black because there were so many, and that's where they decided to congregate. Remember that story?
I do.
Okay. Well, interestingly, you would not think that lightning would strike twice in one person's life. But let me tell you what happened last week. I started to notice an ever-increasing amount of fruit flies in my house. Now, not like a swarm. It was more like, you know, you come home, you go to, you know, maybe open a bottle of wine. And the next thing you know, there's like a bunch of fruit flies, because fruit flies love wine, kind of buzzing around you and your glass. And then the next day I would, you know, repeat the same behavior, only I would notice this time there was like twice as many fruit flies. And before I knew it, I had fruit flies in my kitchen. I had fruit flies upstairs. Not like I had to like push them aside like a thick fog, but I would just notice them flying around. Going, why are so many fruit flies gathering in my house? Because I said, maybe it's the weather. As you know, it's been kind of glommy and gross. Maybe it's the weather. What?
Glommy.
Glommy. Yeah.
Okay.
Also, okay. So last week, Monday, I have some fruit flies. Tuesday, I have fruit flies and I start to notice kind of a strange smell that I can't quite identify. Wednesday, I come home from the office. I got fruit flies and a really big smell that I can't identify. I'm in my house. I'm like, oh my God, what has died in here? Is it an animal, vegetable, or mineral? And I start looking around my house and looking around my house. And I figured something must have died in the walls and the fruit flies and the stink. And I'm like, oh, I can't find a damn thing. I can't find anything, you guys. So I go to bed. The next morning is Thursday. Now we're like, you know, 4 days in. I wake up. And I practically need a hazmat suit because I just, it smells so bad in my house. I'm like, this is some sort of spell, this evil, somebody put a thing on me. It's a curse. What is going on? I do another hard target search over my entire house when hard suddenly I decide to open the microwave. Oh. Well, I wish I had done that a lot sooner, because no sooner do I open my microwave when all the problems solve themselves. Out come another band of fruit flies, so many that you could hear them moving their little wings. And underneath all the fruit flies, what do you think was in the microwave, you guys? What do you think?
Fruit.
A banana peel.
Worst. The worst possible thing a person could forget in a microwave was in my microwave.
A glass of red wine that was too cold.
No.
Raw chicken.
Worse than that, I'll tell you.
Blue cheese.
Close. Cauliflower. Cauliflower. Oh. I had defrosted frozen cauliflower in my microwave on Sunday. Forgot about it until Thursday.
Jonna, that must have smelled horrible.
Horrible. But it also attracted fruit flies en masse. And I lived for 4 days amongst it all. Like, I could have died, you guys. I could have died.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
From the poisonous gases of cauliflower forgotten in a microwave. I mean, this is how bad I am. Who doesn't use their microwave for 4 days?
Exactly, because what did you eat for the previous 5 days?
You know, I ate out. I went to my parents. Oh. I begged. I didn't, you know, I just didn't. When I tell you I don't use my kitchen, I ain't joking.
Obviously terrible. Not.
So fortunately, I was able to, you know, obviously discard of the forgotten cauliflower. I don't have a single fruit fly in my house, but that was really the official start of my staycation. And ever since then, I have been doing nothing but cleaning and reorganizing. And it's just no fun. Like, have you guys ever taken a staycation?
Jonna, that's all I ever take. I mean, literally, the last time I was on vacation, if you want to call it a vacation, is when I lived in Florida and had a job. Okay. So, no, I only do staycations. But shouldn't you be happy? I mean, you've got a situation right now where you can follow the advice of some of the guests we've had. You can unclutter, right?
Yeah.
No. Well, yeah.
Well, all right. So here's my spin on this.
Okay.
You get to choose how you look at these chores, whether you're annoyed that you're doing them or kind of like what Frankenberry just said about decluttering. Doesn't it feel good to get these little odds and ends done and taken care of? And so isn't there a positive feeling after you do them?
Right. Like some sort of satisfaction when you realize that closet is now really organized. How cool is that?
Yeah, it is cool.
I will agree with that. There is a sense of, okay.
Accomplishment.
That's done. But take it one step further, okay? You clean out your closet. You organize it. You've stacked all your extra toilet paper. Toilet paper that you amassed over the 3 years of a pandemic. So you've got way more than you will ever need or use, okay? But now what? Now you stand back. How long can you look in your closet and go, I can see the floor? Like, that only lasts you so long. Before that high is done, that buzz is killed. Seriously.
That's not the point, Spielberg. Holy crap. No, you know, I swear to God, you can take anything and do your best to pour half the water out of the glass and call it half empty. You just took a positive and you turned it into a negative in like 2 seconds.
Jonna, do you realize what's happening here? We are currently living in bizarro world where you're being the negative Nelly and Frankenberry is counseling you to see the positive side. What is going on here?
Wow.
I know. I need some Twilight Zone music right now.
What is going on?
I finally rubbed off on him. I finally did.
Of course, you would take credit for it, wouldn't you?
It's like one of those movies where people like trade physical bodies.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like Freaky Friday or Big.
And now, actually, let's think about this. It's a little bit scary because now you're staying home and you're not like going, talking to people and seeing people. And you got a bunch of cats. It's happening.
Oh,
yeah, really. That's a very good point there, Pesky.
It's happening.
Oh, my God.
That is too funny.
Crazy cat lady, and she doesn't even realize it yet.
Oh, my gosh. If I start walking around here in boxer shorts drinking a Bud Light, we are done.
Oh, my God. And Frankenberry's going to start drinking red wine.
Oh, like, could you imagine? He'll be like sipping it out of a cat bowl, like spinning it in his hand to make sure it has legs. Oh, yeah. Oh, isn't that funny? Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to make a whole week on this staycation. I was planning this whole week. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I got it in me.
We'll
have to
see. If you're bored and frustrated, then what's the point?
Exactly. I'm the only person I know who could screw up a staycation. I don't know.
Is that why you have shown up to this Zoom call today as Cinderella?
Yeah, because I'm doing nothing but cleaning and choring on my chorecation. That's why.
Gotcha.
One for me.
Here's the other bright side to this, that you are not out in public sporting your shallot.
Good point.
I got some nice highlights in my shallot yesterday.
Did you get a discount because your hair's so short?
Yeah. She didn't need as much.
But you did recently go to the casino, though, didn't you?
That is true. I did take a trip to the casino, and I had a nice dinner at Scott Conant's, I think it's pronounced Chileo. He's got a nice restaurant at the Resorts World Casino. I have a signed book. Our good friend Jeannie Kelly gave us a signed
Peace, Love, Pasta.
Yeah, I didn't see him there, but that was nice. And that was fun. And normally I have never won a dime at that casino. I've gone several times. I've walked out a loser every time. This time was going to be no different until the morning we were leaving. And I decided to invest just a teeny tiny bit more in a slot machine on my way out the door and ended up breaking even. So there you go. Not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was really the official start of my staycation. So that's really all I got. I'm sitting here staring at a package that I have to return because during my staycation, I'm also doing drunk shopping, which I like to do normally, not just on a staycation. And I ended up buying something and having to return it. And I returned it to the store I did not buy it from. So they contacted me.
Nicely done.
You returned something to the wrong store?
I bought it from store A. It didn't fit a pair of jeans. Didn't fit. I returned it to store B. Store B contacted me and said, "We don't sell these." And I'm like, "Yeah, you do." They're like, no, we don't. This is our store is named store B. And here's your pants and your receipt from store A. What do you want us to do with them? And then I was like, well, you might as well burn them.
Or do you have somebody in the office that these fit?
Did you just drop something? Was that the Sagu? You didn't even know you Sagu'd.
Oh, my God. Yes, she did.
Do you want us to burn them?
It's not a total Sagu. It was a Sagu hint. A Sagu hint. You're the one who's supposed to do the Sagu.
I'm going to take that
Sagu. You can follow up on it. Yeah.
Hint and run with it. So coming up after the break, we will be talking to Matt Higgins. He is the author of Burn the Boats, Toss Plan B Overboard, and Unleash Your Full Potential. I cannot wait to talk to him.
Okay, that is what we have on the way. And we will be back with Matt Higgins. You've got Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. And stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour again with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. And it is time now to get to our guest. And Carol has been raving about the book, Jonna as well. And we're talking to Matt Higgins today.
Yeah, I'm gushing a little bit because I'm already on round three. I've read his book twice through. I'm on the third time. Honestly, this guy is brilliant. He's an amazing human being. We're talking with Matt Higgins. He actually became the youngest. And let me just, before I go get into this, I might read a little bit longer than I normally do for introducing a guest. If I read you his whole resume, I'm not exaggerating, we'd have no time to talk. This guy has done so much. So I'll do my best to pick a few snippets from it, and then we'll have a great time talking with him. So he became the youngest mayoral press secretary in New York City at the age of 26, where he managed the media response to 9/11. He planned the rebuilding of the World Trade Center site, including the 9/11 National Memorial and redevelopment of One World Trade Center. He spent 15 years in senior leadership positions with the NFL, including executive vice president of the New York Jets. This is why he and Gary Vaynerchuk are good buddies. And vice president and minority owner of the Miami Dolphins. He is the co-founder of the private investment firm RSE Ventures, investing in over 100 different companies, including Magnolia Bakery, what John and I, big fans, Milk Bar, Warby Parker, and Harry's, to name a few. He is also the co-founder of VaynerMedia, along with his buddy Gary Vaynerchuk. He is an executive fellow at Harvard Business School. He's been a guest shark on Shark Tank, and now he is the author of Burn the Boats, Toss Plan B Overboard, and Unleash Your Full Potential, which he is here today on Happy Hour after being on CNBC, CNN, every other national show. He's taking the time to talk with us to talk about his most recent book. Matt, welcome to Happy Hour.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm frankly a little disappointed that didn't go on for a couple of minutes more, but
I could have.
I do appreciate it.
I could have. You're making the rest of us feel like slackers, and that's okay because you're here to inspire us.
Thank you. I had to just put my fingers in my ears while I listen to you do that. So thank you, though.
Oh, you're welcome. So, Matt, where I'd love to begin, I am loving your book. It's powerful not only when we look at your resume and all that you have accomplished at a young age still, but things were not always so rosy. Things were really difficult for you. And I would love if you could share with us a little bit of your backstory.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And thanks for the kind words about my book. I'm definitely on a mission right now as I tied together this somewhat Forrest Gump life that I've had. But I grew up in Queens, New York, product of a single mom who was amazing, fiercely brilliant, but we were very, very poor and very, very desperate. What do those words mean? Poor, right? But eating government cheese, selling flowers on street corners as an 11-year-old little boy, scraping gum under tables at McDonald's. So real poverty. And also juxtaposed with a mom who was pretty sick. I used to say she had like the trials of Job, you know, we've been forsaken, but was morbidly obese, knees didn't work, but really smart. And so my framework growing up was watching her struggle to try to escape poverty by getting an education as an adult. She got a GED, and I'll explain why that matters to the story, while at the same time feeling like we were standing on quicksand. So my early years were a combination of desperation and this fierce defiance of, I got to get out of poverty as fast as humanly possible.
So, and one of the basis to your story and what makes you so impactful, I think, Matt, at least to me, is when you see people are hugely successful and you think, wow, you know, good for them. But to me, it's more impressive when people come from struggles, not only come from struggles, because you say, and I'll paraphrase here, that the struggles that you go through, they're just part of your story, number one, but you can choose to make what part of the story they represent. Like, you can use them as an asset. You are so much better equipped to change the world and do the things you're doing, not in spite of, but because of the struggles that you went through at a young age.
Yeah, so for me, it's funny. I talk about having a GED so much, and I'll explain to why, that I forget I have a JD, law degree. Like, I find the GED infinitely more interesting. And it actually shocks people sometimes who've gone through poverty and tough circumstances, and they feel like the die is cast, that I talk so much about this degree that is like a last resort versus a Juris Doctorate. So the thing that was inspired by my mother was an epiphany I had very young, saying I have a choice to make. I can either choose to see my life through the framework of I'm a victim and I'm destined to be this way. And I'd watch kids in my neighborhood, frankly, die or do drugs, get into Or I had this conversation. My mother was pretty depressed. And I said, you know what, Mom? I don't want to see the world this way. From now on, I'm going to see the world. Now, that's a little grandiose for a kid, but that rather than things happening to me, I happen to things. And I came up with a radical idea. This was my burn the boats epiphany, which is there was a loophole that if you were to get your GED and do well enough, you could convert that score to a GPA and go to any college in America. And it seemed to make such perfect sense, like the clouds open. Like, wait a second, I'm making $3.75 an hour as a little boy at 13 years old at McDonald's, scraping gum on my hands and knees. But if I become a college student, I can 2X my income, make $8 an hour. I was like, so I got to get this thing called college student as fast as possible. And then once I came up with this plan, which I thought was brilliant, if teachers, guidance counselors were, you're crazy. You're going to be a loser for the rest of your life. And ironically, the one person who thought it was brilliant was my mom. And I sabotaged my entire education. I sat in a land of misfits toys, back of Miss Vega's homeroom, getting left back year after year. So the system would write me off. And I had burned the boats. I took my GED. I went to my prom, the end of my first year on the debate team, 3.5 GPA. And that look of pity and mild disdain from my teachers had turned into one of a begrudging respect. And that has framed my, and we can get into it, but it's framed my entire life philosophy that we all always have a choice about how we choose to react to our circumstances. And it starts with deciding, are you going to be a victim or are you going to retain the one thing that's always yours, which is decide how you're going to respond to your situation.
That's where all of our power lies.
Absolutely. And Matt, this is Jana, not Cinderella. And I absolutely love your story, and I am loving your book as well. And I don't want to jump ahead too much, but the notion of burning the boats is something that many, many people who have achieved a great level of success will tell you to do, like, you know, kind of go all in, all or nothing. And sometimes that's easier to do. Or do you agree that that's easier to do when you've got nothing to lose? Like when you started out, you came from not a lot, right? So burning the boats was, I'm not saying it was easy, but it was a decision that you could make rather quickly. When you've got something and you're trying to make a choice between something good and something great, how do you help people make that choice? How does a person make that choice between good and great versus nothing and something?
Yeah, what you just said is the whole premise of why I went down this rabbit hole of the boats, which is 100%. I agree. It was not a hard choice because I was so desperate. I knew my mother would eventually succumb, which she did. I knew that no one cared, to be perfectly honest. I knew that there was no cavalry coming. So it was an easy choice. I was like, I'm desperate, sad, and this seems logical. I found a portal to a parallel universe. It gets harder when you're not in a crisis. And so when you go back to the beginning of recorded history, this phrase burn the boat shows up over and over in every culture in the world. When there's a general and they are outnumbered 100-1 and their back is against the wall, they self-sabotage. They eliminate their retreat. They literally burn the boats, their cooking pots, food provisions, whatever it takes to conjure the clarity of crisis decision making. So I have seen, once I did it once, and I saw that shift in my teachers' faces. This is, you know, this isn't like narrative. I remember going to my prom and there was Mr. Rosenthal, who on the last day of high school said, "Higgins, what a waste. I'll see you at McDonald's." And as I was walking out, I turned and said, "You know, Mr. Rosenthal, if you see me at McDonald's, it's because I own it." Little kid with hubris, little punk that I was.
But you were right.
But he was right too, conventional wisdom. And I remember the look in their face. Now the look was admiration or a begrudging respect. And I realized, you know, if I had outsourced my judgment to officialdom, I never would have been able to get to where I got. So this became a little bit of a drug that, how do I put myself in uncomfortable situations? But you're 100% right with your question. The challenge people have is, you know, we don't want to live in a hypervigilant state of cortisol flowing through our veins. We want to make clear decisions without having to be in a crisis. So the whole purpose of my book is to appropriate this doctrine of burn the boats, but do it for people who risk doesn't come easy, either because, like me, they came from poverty and they're ashamed, or because they have a lot to lose, or they don't have a supportive spouse, whatever it is. My boat on the cover of this book, it looks like a pagan symbol of a boat, but it's actually a little child's boat in a baby's bathtub, because that was my issue I needed to burn. What does it take for the risk adverse who self-select out of ambition to manage their risk tolerance so they can fully commit to their plan A?
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, that is great.
is that a mic drop moment? I feel like
yeah. So when you get a pause from both of us at the same time, Matt, doesn't happen much. Let me just.
I didn't want to interrupt it. I was saving it.
No, it's all good. Something that there's a few things that you talk about in the book that have stuck out with me, and some are simple, some are profound. Actually, they're all profound, but some are simple. One of the things you mentioned that kind of made me pause, because we've had a guest on our show, she's written a number of, Kristen Helmstetter, I think her father-in-law was a founder of NLP, is big into affirmations, self-talk. She's written a number of books on self-talk. She's been on our show a few times. But you put a twist on self-talk that struck a nerve with me. That's different than what most people tell you. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. And I made a lot of choices in this book, and there, the whole book is a rejection of what we find on Instagram, these very simplistic posts about failure is good. And there's a lot of self-styled gurus who act like they got it all figured out. And I don't know about you, but when I see those, it makes me feel bad because I don't have it all figured out. So I wrote my book so I would read my book. This is an act of commiseration, not lecturing from the mount, because I'm still a work in progress. So I wrote a section about imposter syndrome. And how when I went on Shark Tank, which most people think would be, you know, so fun, and why would that cause any anxiety? I was completely freaked out because I felt like an imposter, and that Mark Cuban was going to see right through this veneer, these custom suits, and see the kid eating government cheese with mom and that Roach Motel in Queens that I grew up in. And so I was freaked out. Best piece of advice I ever got was Damon John pulled me aside. He's from Queens too. And he said, after a bunch of expletives about how I should forget about everybody else on set, said to me, it was almost like Socratic. He goes, Matt, you belong here because you are here. And the point that there is no arbiter of belonging. No one's going to tell you to take a seat at the boardroom table from wherever you came. And so when I was sitting on the set, I forgot all that advice, like we all do. And I froze anyway. And I remember going into the zone at one moment when I could see this sort of look of pity on Mark Cuban's face as he's looking over saying, who invited this guy? Because I wasn't saying anything. And I thought, you know what? And then the dialogue began. You know what, Matt? You didn't come from nothing, literally dirt, to end up overseeing the rebuilding of the World Trade Center after 9/11. You witnessed death and destruction. You didn't sit on the set of a TV show. You know what I mean? You went through hell to try to save your mother. That self-talk in a third person, which is what you're getting at in the book.
Yes.
Studies have shown that when you talk to yourself in a third person, you create a super ego authority who has your best interest in heart. It's not you. Hey, I am great. That actually doesn't work as effective as saying, hey, Matt, you're great, because now there's a super ego authority living in your brain. Sound a touch crazy as I say this, but who is not your mom or dad. It's somebody who objectively has your best interests in heart. And studies show that you are much more likely to respond to that. So when I was on the set of Shark Tank, as cringy and embarrassing as this is, that's exactly what I did. And that first 5 minutes was horrendous. And the next 10 hours was bliss.
Wow. So the self-talk, addressing ourselves in third person. Love it. That absolutely paused me. Something else I want to speak to is, it was unusual because this is kind of, it's part business book. You're an amazing, hugely successful entrepreneur, but it's personal development. It's all of that mixed in. But when we think about the advice to become an entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur, and the logistics and funding and all of those aspects of a business, you stand up and say, data is secondary. Make it a gut sandwich. And we're not used to hearing about the power of our intuition. So I would love for you to speak to that for a moment.
Yeah, I feel like this whole book is an attempt for me to advocate to the unrepresented self. And literally, because there's people from marginalized groups or people who have been access to capital, whether from different, you know, diverse communities, women, like who, there's a lot of implicit bias that begins to even seep into your own mind. And I wanted to write a book that advocated for the self and explain why you have so much more within yourself than you believe. And let me pull back the curtain, the dirty little secret about how decisions are made. And so when you break down some of the best companies that were, you know, ever created, and you realize the absurdity of when they were created, you start realizing that they were born on intuition, right? So let's use Airbnb as an example. Some kid named Brian, who's a friend of mine, sleeps on a futon in 2009. He's like, hey, there might be people who might want to rent this crappy couch, which makes no sense if you think about it. I would like, people are going to steal my stuff, but he had what I call a proprietary insight. And then he tried to probably get validation from his friends who thought he was crazy. crazy. And then at the end, he gave himself the green light based on intuition, because there's no way there was enough data to support Airbnb at the moment that he launched that business. And if you deconstruct some of the greatest innovations of our time, the reality is they were greenlit with intuition. Why is that important? Because a lot of people who are risk adverse or unsupported, they allow data to kill their dreams because they search for validation, because they can't go it alone. And then validation doesn't exist because a little bit of an abstract thought, but it's important, I think, to share it, that the magnitude of an opportunity has an inverse relationship with the amount of evidence there is to support it. If you see something on the true cutting edge that you believe in your heart through intuition can change the world, of course, there's not going to be enough validation or evidence, because that's what makes it an opportunity. You found it. And so I really wanted to make the point. Let me pull back the curtain and tell you the dirty little secret. Evidence is used to justify decisions, not actually to approve decisions. Intuition approves.
You also talk about the opposite of that, because you've had some moments where you've wanted to start a new venture, and then you took a few steps down the path and decided, yeah, no. And that's okay too.
Yeah, like I always say, it's okay to give yourself permission to go pretty far down the track, to know how would you decide when you were fully presented with the opportunity, and then kill it. The reason why I put that in the book, I get so many young people who reach out to me, and their parents honestly have forced them into a decision that they're, you know, the dad insists they become an accountant because he doesn't think he has what it takes to be the next Messi. And now they're far down the road with an accounting degree that they actually despise. And it's starting to chip away their soul. But they feel like there's a sunk cost. Like, well, now I already have this accounting degree. That's why I love my law degree. It's like it's the most expensive wallpaper a person could buy. And I'm like, no disrespect to lawyers out there. I love managing you and paying you, but I never want to be you. And I never even took the bar exam. And I tell kids that, and they're like, you spent $250,000 and you never took a bar exam? I said, no, because it's wallpaper and it gets people to give me respect, and that's worth it. And so I put that in a book to make it clear to people, like, focus more on opportunity cost and not on sunk cost. And I think as people don't always value their future potential, they overvalue their sunk cost, the effort they already put in.
And undervalue joy and happiness and fulfillment and satisfaction. Because if you, okay, you spent $250,000, but does that mean you realized and you got accepted into a prestigious firm? They gave you an upfront payment to join the firm, and you still returned the money and chose another path because you realized you wouldn't be happy. Yeah. Gary Vaynerchuk are buddies.
Yeah, by the way, not before I tried to get them to lay me off so I could sort of keep the advance. I was like, you know, the economy, I swear this is a true story. I don't talk about this in the book. I was like, you know, the economy really is turning. Probably could use that cash, right? You want to fire me? But and I'm not perfect about managing the balance between pursuit of joy. I've just decided that for me, the joy of living is in the striving. It is in the act of pursuit. It's not necessarily in the act of winning. And that brings me happiness, and that's okay. But I find people have a lot of pressure on them that they can't even see where it's coming from. And then they live their lives according to these unspoken rules.
Oh my gosh. I wish we could go on for an hour here, Matt. We're wrapping up here with Matt Higgins, author of Burn the Boats, among other things. If you want to go to his website at his company, rseventures.com, and have an hour or two, you could read his bio. but Matt, any parting words to our listeners about the primary message of Burn the Boats?
Yep. And my parting words are, for those who hear this title and think, like, this sounds risky, you know, I need to actually have a backup plan. I'm not arguing any way that you shouldn't process risk. I am the most paranoid risk taker you will ever meet. Yeah, the book argues that the reason why you're afraid to take risk, because you haven't confronted that which you're afraid of. And there is a process to confront risk so that you can confidently, when you're all in on plan A, make sure that you are not being distracted by this thing looking over your shoulder. And I'll ask anybody listening to this who has a big dream, if your whole life were to fall apart, you would find yourself destitute because your plan A didn't work out, do you really have trouble figuring out the soul-crushing job you'd settle for? We all know how to survive. Mm-hmm. How to protect ourselves. And yet we amplify the fear of, what am I going to do? We all know what we're going to do. And so hopefully, if you read this book, it's meant to hold up a mirror to what you already suspect. suspect you're capable of and give you a green light to go for it. And it's not a simplistic, bombastic crypto bro, burn the boats with everybody in it. It's an empathetic. I put a lot of comfortable details about myself in it so that you can see yourself and you can figure out what's it going to take to go all in.
Carol, before we wrap up, I got to tell you, Matt, you are one of your greatest gifts. And one of the things I love most about you is that you are so successful and yet you can resonate with all of us. And that is just an incredible gift that makes you an incredible human being.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Honestly, this feels like my life's work. Like, I don't have a goal beyond this, getting this book out.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for sharing yourselves with us through this interview. Thank you for all the love and work and effort and wisdom and truth that you put in your book, Burn the Boats. Where can people find you, follow you on social media if they want to become Uber fans of you like we are?
Great. Two things. I'm on Instagram a lot, M Higgins, and I'm on LinkedIn a lot. I read every single DM about the book. So if you've made I call them my fellow boat burners. If you've made a radical change in your life, I want to hear it because I'm human. And every day I have to wake up and I have to resupply my energy. So when you send me those DMs and you say it helped change your life, you give me energy for one day more. So send me those DMs. Please.
And he walks that talk, people, because that's how I secured him on this interview, is I followed him on Instagram, loving the book, and sent him a message on how much I loved it. And here you are.
Here we are.
Yeah. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Happy Hour.
Yes. Much appreciated, Matt. Much appreciated. And we're not done quite yet here with Happy Hour. We still have segment number 3 on the way with Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci and some guy. And we'll be right back. So stick around.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we are back one more time here with Happy Hour. John Spilbore, Carol Pesci, and myself. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frankenberry.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done. I'm giving you like a little tennis applause right now. Very nicely done.
Just the tips of your fingers.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
With no sound.
Yes. And so, Matt Higgins, it was nice to have him on. And Carol, I know you're time number 3 partially through the book now, and he was great.
Guys, I'm telling you, and Jonna's reading it, so she knows he's brilliant. The amount that this guy has accomplished. I mean, he was an executive vice president at the New York Jets. He's part owner of the Miami Dolphins. If you're into sports, he was one of the people that started the Champions League in soccer. He's a co-owner of VaynerMedia with Gary Vaynerchuk. And he's a guy that really cares about helping people live better. His compassion, his humility. I'll tell you, he shares some pretty personal things in his book. You can really feel like the guy is genuine and really wants to help you with what he's gone through.
Yeah, exactly. And despite all of his success, he feels like he just wants to take time to meet us. When I say us, I mean, you know, regular folk who are looking to do, you know, live their dreams. That's a really incredible bridge that he's building there with his personality and his book and everything else he does.
Yep. I follow him on Instagram. Glad I do. And his book, Burn the Boats, is actually absolutely phenomenal. Powerful.
Speaking of powerful, I have a closet to clean out.
Another one? Check your microwave first, okay?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Please do. Please do. And a menagerie of animals out on your back porch to video.
Yeah, I'm staring at one as we speak. Mama Cat just came up. So now's my chance. Lure her with probably a real dead mouse that I got lying around here somewhere if I just look hard enough.
I would recommend cat food instead there, John.
Okay.
In all seriousness, your objective is to capture them so they can be neutered and released, and or no, you're just feeding them.
I want to capture the kittens so that they can be adopted into forever homes. I don't need 3 feral kittens running around because it makes me nervous. And yeah, I want to capture mama cat and preferably daddy cat so they can get fixed and shots and all that stuff. And then I don't know if mama cat would ever be happy inside. We'll see.
Oh, yep. You're going down the caddy hole.
I am not.
Yes, you are. You just said out loud the possibility of that cat coming in your house.
You better hope Mom and Ants doesn't listen to this show.
That's right. Yes. That's right. Well, I'll edit this part out if she decides to download a copy.
Oh my God.
But anyway, for Jonas Spillmore, for Carol Pesci, for Matt Higgins, who joined us today earlier, and his book, Burn the Boats, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll be back again next week, same time, so please join us again then. Until then, have a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonas Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.